The Penny Appeal story tells, in his own words, the remarkable account of how a young British Muslim, Adeem Yunus, overcame the tragic loss of his father when he was just 6 years old to become a multi-millionaire entrepreneur and the founder of one of the largest British Muslim charities, Penny Appeal. I do like a story with a happy ending, Adeem. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Very good. A pleasure to talk to you today. Lovely to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's absolutely wonderful to join you, and thank you very much for covering the story.
No problem. Let's go back to when you were very young. I mean, losing a parent at six is indeed a tragic thing. But I guess losing your father so young made your mother's life all the more difficult to look after you.
It did, yeah. And you know, at the time when you're a child, either you know, if you're born in a palace or you're born in, as a pauper, you don't know any different. And, and I guess as a child, you know, I didn't know any different. But I could see that my mother was struggling. I could see that there were so many challenges, and I could see what she was doing was not normal. You know, she kind of was an entrepreneur in her own right. She had a sewing business at home. Then it went to the market, and then she had her own retail shop. She learned how to drive when, you know, nobody, females didn't drive, let alone Asian Muslims drive. She learned how to speak English when that wasn't her language. She came to the UK as a teenager, and she really participated in society, and she helped other community members out, especially females in the community, but the wider community as well. And I learned so many life lessons in terms of work ethic, in terms of drive, in terms of determination, in terms of hearing people, oh, she's not going to do well, or she can't do this, or she can't do that. And she smashed through the ceiling of what was acceptable and normal for a woman, let alone somebody who's Muslim, who's Asian, whose first language is English. And it was a constant jaw-dropping, like, wow. And so many females, especially in the community, would come to my mum, and still do. She's a, you know, pillar in the community. And they'd say to her, you know, come for advice, or, you know, come to help, you know, fix relationships up, or help mend people's businesses, or problem solve, and so on and so forth. And it's just such a pleasure to have a person of that strength and determination in your life. And I think sadly the loss of my father was the time, or the enabler for my mum to come out and be strong and really kind of flourish in a way as well, in sense of being able to do all the stuff and realize her full potential, which I don't think she would have done. And I don't think many women do, or many partners do, that live in maybe the shadow of their, you know, primary partner, or the primary breadwinner, whoever that might be, male or female.
Yes, and an absolutely glowing example that the past need not define our future.
100%, 100%. And you know, in terms of the community wrote her off, the local people, even the teachers at school, everybody was like, oh, she's not going to do well. Her children are never going to do well. There was a lot of pity. There was a lot of kind of, you know, coming and giving us toys, hand-me-down books. And when people would see in the street, they'd give you a £5 note or a £2 or a £1. And they'd be like, oh, you know, so sorry to hear about your loss and so on. It was a real, you could feel the negative energy. But my mum never really, she never allowed that to impact on us. And she would constantly remind us, I'm not your mum, I'm your mum and I'm your dad. Aww. And I'm here and I'm going to support you and I'm going to give you the best I can. And I guess that drive and that kind of responsibility that she had on her shoulders, and she shared with us, and she kind of made us, you know, kind of join in that and think like, right, we're going to get through this, and we're going to get through this together, really gave us a motivation to join in that struggle and really, you know, kind of try the best that we can.
How wonderful. How wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And so to this above a pizza shop, a tiny office above a pizza shop, very handy for where you used to work, and to this this great idea, what this light bulb moment that you had in 2000, and it was really initially, wasn't it, to solve a very personal problem?
You know what they say, necessity is the mother of all action.
Yeah.
And don't judge me on this, Bill. Call me desperate, but my mum, bless her, she was saying, Adeem, you've done well, you've gone to college, you're at university, and you know, you're getting everything sorted in your life, and you know, you've had this great experience and whatnot, and you've got a job at the pizza shop. But what you need, what you need to do now, and what I need you to do is, I need you to take responsibility, and I need you to get married.
Oh.
Because all good Muslim boys get married. They don't have relationships. They don't have girlfriends.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know, the other types of relationships. They get married, and I need you to get married. And I'm like, Mom, are you? You know, I thought she's joking. I thought, yeah, she'll get over it. then slowly, she's like, your granddad's getting old now, and your granddad might not have too many years left, and I need some support in the kitchen, and I need some support, and I need some company as well, and at home, and I'm, you know, I get a bit lonely, and you know, you getting married would help all of this. And I'm thinking, this is the solution. And then she asked me, she says, Adeem, do you have a girlfriend? And I thought, Mom, all our childhood you've been saying girlfriends are haram, they're not allowed, you're not allowed having, you know, not allowed to have relationships. And now he's saying to me, do I have a girlfriend? I'm like, of course I don't have a girlfriend. I've got a fear of having a girlfriend because I might get beat up by your mother.
Funny. How funny. Says,
well, if you haven't got a girlfriend, then it's easy, isn't it? We'll go to Pakistan and we'll get you married to your uncle's daughter.
Oh.
And I was like, what? I can't get married to my uncle's daughter. I see her as my sister. I see that as family. So even though it was acceptable, culturally acceptable and the norm in Asian subcontinent society, it wasn't the norm for a British Muslim. I'm British, I'm English. You know, that, we don't think like that. That's not normal for us, that's not acceptable. And it wasn't just my challenge, Bill. It was a challenge of a whole generation.
Absolutely.
A whole generation, second, third generation of British Muslims that are now being told or being kind of, you know, forced, maybe coerced, maybe emotionally blackmailed to go back to their country of origin, Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, Somalia, Sudan, Egypt, whatever that might be, and get married from back home, whatever back home is.
Yeah.
And I thought, this isn't right. This isn't, there must be another option. And there was no other option. The mosques weren't providing the service. The community centers weren't providing the service. Because the community was so fractured and so varied, and you know, different people were doing different things, and professionals and, you know, factory workers and so on and so forth, you weren't able to access families and access people who were like-minded and people who were similar in their kind of like where they wanted to go in life. So I was in the IT business. We were doing web design. At that time, it was the older dial-up, two internet.
Yep.
We were developing websites for people. We were designing flyers and leaflets. And I said to my partner, Stephen Lewis, I said, Stephen, we've got to design a website for Muslims. I said, it's the future. Wow. He looked at me and he thought, you're just desperate. you just want to get married. And I sold it to him. And, you know, I thought to myself, I did a pretty good job there. I said, Stephen. So we had this like pet project, a side project, which was called singlemuslim.com. So it's a dating website for Muslims.
Yeah.
It was the first of its kind. It's now the largest. Not just the desktop, but it's now the largest Muslim matrimonial stroke dating app in the world for Muslims. And it was just such a blessing, and we never looked back, really. That was really where my life changed in terms of developing that, helping myself and helping others and helping a whole generation. We've had over 100,000 marriages.
Goodness
from the app
me.
Now.
That's incredible. Including your own, of course.
including my own.
So, wonderful. You know,
we've got four beautiful, beautiful children.
Fantastic.
Been
That's great that you set this up, and then you're actually one of its leading success stories. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And tell us, you know, what makes it different from other global dating apps, some of which, of course, don't have that great, you know, a respect in society. Things like Tinder, I would think of.
And that's a really, really great question. The answer to that is, it is what it's all about, what your intentions are and what the end goal is. We went to a dating conference a few years ago with all the big dating apps and dating websites. And there was a simple panel question, and I was on the panel, and they said, what do you classify as success? So then it's like, oh, what do you classify as success? Well, it's two swipes right, isn't it? So if you both swipe right, that's a success. Oh, it's a coffee, isn't it? If you go for a coffee with somebody, oh, it's a bit of a frivolous, naughty relationship, maybe one night stand. And, you know, ours was like, no, we know what success is, and we'll tell you what success is. A success is marriage. two people getting together and getting married, that's what we classify as a success. Mm. And we were clear in our goals, in our objective and in our outcome. And I guess that's what makes the website so successful, because it's all geared around marriage. And it's all geared around long-term relationships that are there to not just help two individuals, two families, the whole community and the society at large. And that's what's, you know, that, that success has breed success has bred success. And we've been going now for 21 years this year, Bill. It's not, we're the granddad of the digital, digital sector.
And it's worth pointing out that a third of UK Muslims are currently under the age of 15. So that population is going to come through. You're uniquely placed there, aren't you, basically?
We are open arms and we're there to embrace, absolutely. And we've got a reputation. We're set up and, you know, we're known in the community as the go-to place to get married. It is literally the only reputable place, singlemuslim.com, that people are able to go and find marriage and find, you know, people who are serious about that. And like you mentioned, do the dating app. There's so many different dating apps that you can, you know, date people for different reasons, or short-term dating, date people in the same football club, or, you know, same hobbies, same interests. But it's dating. It's just casual. We're serious. We're focused and we're, you know, marriage only.
And the story doesn't end there. Many people would sit back on their laurels and call that it, but no, not for you. And you went off and launched one of the UK's leading global charities. So tell us about the Penny Appeal.
Yeah, and Billy, it literally was that, because, you know, you get to a stage where your dreams have come true and you feel so blessed that it's the ideal, or it's the kind of like the digital business, isn't it, where you're making money on an evening, on a weekend whilst you're sleeping, and you're thinking, okay, wow, this is amazing. But then you get to a point, you think to yourself, is that it? Is that what life's about?
Yeah.
You know, you've got a nice car, you've got a nice house, you've got nice holidays, you're eating well, you know, you've got all the designer wear that you want. And then, you know, I went through a journey of self-discovery, and I thought, you know, let me go back to my ancestral home in Pakistan and really understand my roots, understand why my father came to the UK in the first place, and how that all worked. So I went back to Pakistan. I went to a very, very rural village, my ancestral home. And I saw there was no roads to the village. There was no water. There was no gas. There was no electricity. There was no medical care. And it was poverty that I was like, my jaw was on the floor. And I was like, oh my God, I was just so heartbroken.
Mm.
People would die because they'd get pneumonia. People would die because they would get an infection. People would die because they literally were not able to afford to get to the local town, to go to the local city to get an operation. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, like, why me? Why God? Why have I been born in the UK? And why has God blessed me with such an amazing life? And if it was just destiny, because my dad's brother is living in that village in Pakistan, and I could have been born in that village in Pakistan, and I could have not been educated, not had any opportunities. And I was like, thank you, God, for the opportunities that you've given in the UK. And I felt compelled, absolutely compelled, to give something back. And I thought, you know, not just because of me personally and my personal gratitude, but also because of how my father, if he was still alive, God bless his soul, he would have done work, and he would have gone back, and he would have given back to his community in Pakistan. And that's where I guess the whole idea of Penny Appeal started. And we sponsored a teacher called Ali, and Ali was getting paid £30 a month, and on one return flight back from Pakistan, my car was parked at Manchester Airport. I picked it up and it was empty, so I filled it with fuel. And the nozzle was just going and going, and it clicked. I looked over it, and I was still kind of deeply thinking about Ali and how he was impacting the lives of the whole community and educating them out of poverty, and how he was doing that for £30. And I looked over at the petrol dial, and it said £90.
Wow.
It clicked, and it was £90. Exactly. And I was like, I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
I was absolutely heartbroken. I was devastated. And I was like, oh my God, it was pain. I was literally in physical pain thinking, that's a quarter of a year. That's 3 months salary for Ali. And I've just put it in my car.
Yeah.
And then I'll buy a coffee. I'll pay a gym membership that I never use. I'll pay an expensive mobile phone subscription. I put my loose change that I've got in my pocket because he doesn't wear my jeans, my skinny jeans down. I put it in a pot over there and I'll forget about it. But those pennies are life-changing, yes. life-saving, life, you know, it's absolutely amazing what our small change can do. And that's Penny Appeal, the charity, was born on that forecourt. Small change, big difference. That's the motto. And that is actually, you know, funny enough, the title of the book, Small Change, Big Difference, The Journey of Penny Appeal. You know, that's where the journey started. We've had some amazing successes. We've broken Guinness World Record. We're twice Guinness World Record holders. We've worked with some of the biggest celebrities, Yusuf Cat Stevens. We work with Amir Khan, the boxer.
Amazing.
We work with the Dragon's Den, who's actually the he's actually written the initial testimonial to the book as well, James Khan.
Yes.
So we work with some of the biggest Muslim celebrities, British Muslim celebrities that are available. We work with mainstream celebrities. We work with DFID, Department for International Development. We're working with other charities, local charities. We work with churches, synagogues, you know, all communities and of faith and communities with of no faith. We work in abroad in 56 countries. We work here in the UK. And I guess the book is about the journey of all the successes, the highs, but also the lows, the other heartbreak and the losses that we've had, the challenges that we've had, the relationships that we've had, the good relationships, the bad relationships. And I guess it's the first in our sector. Nobody else in the sector has written a book about the charity, about the foundation of the charity, and about the success of the charity. And that one of the headlines is, how do you turn a penny charity that asks for pennies per day into a £100 million turnover organization?
Sure.
That has got offices in 5 different countries, Canada, America, South Africa, Australia, Dubai. You know, how do you do that? How do you build that? And I guess that's that whole building block and that whole success, today's success, the impact, the social impact that we've got, how does that happen? That happened because of the entrepreneurial seeds that, you know, that my mum planted in my childhood, and then the business that I had that was focused on the Muslim target audience, and now having a business that's got a digital footprint because of quite literally the blank check that single Muslim and its team wrote to Penny Appeal saying, you go do what you need to do, and we're here, we've got your back.
Amazing. Amazing. And tell us, Adeem, 2020 was a strange year for pretty much everybody in the world, but for charities it must have been particularly tough. How did you get through last year and the beginning of this one?
You know what? My heart goes out to so many different people because it was just such a struggle. And we saw that struggle firsthand at Penny Appeal because we were involved with food banks. We were involved with local communities. We've got a helpline, a COVID listing line that we direct people to different services, and we signpost them to various emergency and non-emergency organizations. Mm. And we saw firsthand of the impact that COVID had on communities, but individuals as well. But, you know, we are, you know, a very savvy organization. We're a digital organization with a massive digital backbone, again, because of singlemuslim.com. And, you know, a lot of charities struggled. A lot of what I call retail charities that have got charity shops that are in the retail space struggled. But because we're in the digital space, and that's where our home is, and we've got a big presence on broadcast TV, so people are at home watching TV, people were surfing the internet, mobile phones and whatnot, we actually grew year on year 30%.
Wow.
And that's not, and that's not because of, you know, but sadly, charities are there to help the needy and other people, humanity, I guess. Even though people were struggling, the British community was struggling, the people of the UK were struggling, but they actually saw other people struggle and they donated. They donated even more. And that, you know, that's the power of us Brits, I guess. And that's, you know, we help, we always help. We help people around the world, and we help even more when we are in need of help ourselves. And that's just, it's just amazing that that's happened, and how that's happened in a time of crisis for everybody, in a time of uncertainty in terms of, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, next week, let alone next year.
Yeah.
It just shows the giving nature of humans and how they're ready to help other people.
What an inspiring story. God bless the owner of that pizza shop. If he hadn't opened that pizza shop all those years ago...
God bless the pizza shop owner, 100%. Amen to that, amen.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Very inspiring stuff. People can get the book, Small Change, Big Difference, The Penny Appeal Story. Adeem Yunus, it's been fantastic to talk to you today. As they say, keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You take care of yourself. All the best. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.